So today, being Ekadasi, we're going to read, as we do on every Ekadasi, we're going to read from some of the books which describe Srila Prabhupada's pastimes and preaching activities. So today we're reading from Transcendental Diary, Travels with His Divine Grace, from November 1975 to April 1976. As it's recorded by Harisori Prabhu. So, we had reached the point where Prabhupada is traveling in Andhra Pradesh. So this is especially relevant. Here we all are in Andhra Pradesh. And this is in January 1976. Prabhupada is in Nellore. At this point, Prabhupada had come to Nellore because Mahamsa Swami, who was initially here in the Hyderabad center, he had contacted some elderly ladies there in Nellore who were interested to donate land to the society. So Nellore, being an important town, city in Andhra Pradesh, Prabhupada was interested, and Prabhupada went there along with some devotees and stayed there for some time. And we'll read now what happens. So after much delay and frequent requests, now nearly at the end of Prabhupada's stay in Nellore, the deed of gift from the two parcels of land has finally been produced. But it is a gift with many conditions. Scrutiny of the fine print revealed several dubious clauses. Prabhupada sat at his desk as Gopal Krishna and Mahamsa Swami read out the details. One clause insisted that on the 2-acre plot, a temple, a comparative religious studies library, and a meditation hall be built. Prabhupada shook his head. He indicated that as far as we are concerned, we have no use for such things. A temple with the deities of Radha Krishna is sufficient because they are the only objects of our meditation. Moreover, the Vedic knowledge is complete, so what is the need for comparison? So in other words, Prabhupada was not interested to have a meditation hall. He says the real meditation is in the temple room. You come and see the deities of Radha and Krishna, and you can meditate there in front of the divine couple. But not that we have to have some hall where people simply sit silently and do some silent meditation. Because silent meditation is not the process for this age. And we're not encouraging people with this silent meditation. Rather, we're preaching chanting, mantra meditation, loud kirtan, not just silence. The sound of silence. Real sound of silence, Prabhupada said, is chanting Hare Krishna. So meditation hall was not needed, and also a library to study comparative religion was also not needed. Prabhupada explains why. He said the Vedic literatures are already there. He said they're so complete, the Vedic literature are so complete, there's no need for any comparison. We don't have to be looking at different religions and comparing what we think is right and what we think is wrong. Everything is there in the Vedic scriptures. So Prabhupada had his standards, what he wanted. You know, he wanted to see nice temples with beautiful deities. That was very important. But these other things, not so much important. Other conditions were more explicit. They declared that if the project is not completed within 3 years, then the land and whatever stands on it will be turned over to another charitable organization, such as a certain mission based in Calcutta. So Prabhupada did not appreciate these kind of clauses, that if people want to give something, you know, with good faith, they shouldn't put all kinds of conditions on it, that you have to, you know, do this by a certain date, otherwise we're going to take it away. You know, Prabhupada didn't want that kind of gift. He was happy people wanted to give some land to serve Krishna. That's fair enough. But if they're going to give the land, they should give it. Not put conditions that you don't do, or if you don't do this, we're going to take it back and give it to some other people. So, as for the 7-acre plot of land on which the house and garden stand, the document stated that if ISKCON did not take possession and utilize it fully within 1 year of the death of the sisters, then it will also be turned over to some suitable charitable organization. The same mission in Calcutta was named. Everyone agreed. It seemed clear there was some kind of plan to have ISKCON begin development of the land. Then, by some ploy, its timely completion will be prevented, thus giving reason to have it seized and handed over to this Calcutta mission. It would not be difficult to thwart any building project by someone or another cutting off the supply of cement which the government controls and rations. So certainly in those years, 1976, you know, it's not easy to do things. Cement was very difficult to get, had to go through government channels, and you know, certainly if somebody wanted to block the construction plan, then it wouldn't be difficult to do it. So they thought Prabhupada could see that this is not a very serious proposition. With this information, many pieces of the puzzle now fell into place. This Calcutta mission is also well known as the Murgi mission, Murgi meaning chicken, because its members also keep large chicken farms and are known meat eaters. These two sisters raise chickens and eat meat. This mission also has a consistent formula for the layout of their ashrams, a temple, a comparative studies library, and a meditation hall. Even the planting of the tulsi bushes, which we had taken as a sign of devotion to Krishna, took on a new meaning considering these revelations. There are two kinds of tulsi trees, one with green leaves and one with blue leaves, the green being named after Lord Rama and the blue after Lord Krishna. Inspecting the garden on our first day here, I had noticed many tulsi bushes planted in an alternating sequence, green, blue, Rama, Krishna, Rama, Krishna. I also recalled the tulsi bush in a pot that had been trimmed into the shape of a large bird. No doubt now that it is a chicken. There was the murti of Gopal Krishna placed outside, exposed to the elements, and the strange, withdrawn reception we received upon arrival. Now it is obvious to us that all our hosts are definitely not devotees of Krishna. Analyzing their ulterior motives, Prabhupada pointed out that ISKCON is one of the only organizations in India with the manpower and money to initiate large projects like the one proposed here. People are steadily losing interest in other missions, and this particular Calcutta mission is reportedly experiencing considerable difficulty with dwindling membership and income. It seems clear, therefore, that ISKCON is being set up to give a strong start to the project, only to be removed later by what now has shown itself to be a deceptive legal maneuver. Who the villains of this piece of trickery are is not clear, but Prabhupada did say that being widows, the sisters would have been easy targets for unscrupulous so-called spiritualists with no interest in regulated spiritual practice. Still, he wasn't blaming anyone, but some action must be taken to protect our interests. Prabhupada decided our course of action. Mahamsa Swami is to meet with the sisters and explain to them that a gift is something given unconditionally, that the donation of land should be in the spirit of Bhagavad Gita 1720, describing charity in the mode of goodness. That gift, which is given out of duty at the proper time and place to a worthy person and without expectation of return, is considered to be charity in the mode of goodness. He said that if they refuse to give it unconditionally, then we should politely back out and withdraw from the project. So here you see an example of something which came up now and again. Prabhupada was anxious to establish centers in India, and especially if people were going to donate some land, then he was interested to utilize it. He saw this as an opportunity to have some nice centers, just like here in Abbott's temple here. The land was donated by Mr. Pulareddy, a very generous donation, and Prabhupada took the opportunity. He saw this as a very ideal piece of land in the center of the city, and Prabhupada immediately arranged for men and money that we would be able to have this temple constructed. And now it's being maintained so nicely. So when the offer came in Nellore, Prabhupada was also interested, so much so that he went to see the land personally. But on his arrival there, he could see that it wasn't such a genuine offer. Now, sometimes this would happen. People would try to take advantage. You know, in Bombay also, the land at Juhu, there was also a big controversy with that land. One point, the man who was selling the land was taking the money but keeping the land. He would sell the land at a good price and get the money, but then he'd keep the land and then he'd sell it to somebody else, and he went on like this. But when he sold it to Prabhupada, Prabhupada very intelligently immediately put the deities there. And once you put the deity, then you know you cannot move the deity. So, but still there was some battle there. Anyway, Prabhupada came out successful in that case in Juhu, Bombay. Here in Nellore, Prabhupada didn't, you know, that these two ladies, elderly ladies, had some other motive, as described here. That people, they were thinking that our society will take the land and develop it, and then they will give it to some other mission, because they didn't really want people chanting Hare Krishna. They were more inclined to, and they didn't also like the idea of vegetarianism. They thought, you know, chicken is good, and like this. So many problems. So Prabhupada explains here that if they're going to give charity, it should be done according to the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. It should be offered without any motive, at the proper time and place, without any expectation of anything in return. And he said, if they'll give like that, then we will accept. But ultimately, of course, they didn't agree, so that project fell apart. So later in the afternoon, Srila Prabhupada went to the local Rotary Club in Nellore, where a special meeting was convened in his honor. Mr. G. Gopala Reddy, the gentleman who accompanied Srila Prabhupada on morning walks, and the current president of the club, received him warmly, lauding his worldwide preaching efforts. Then, to a small but attentive audience, he delivered a well-rounded lecture on the general philosophy of Krishna consciousness, describing his Krishna consciousness movement as a tiny little attempt to convince people about God. He asked them all to heed the advice of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Prabhupada is quoted, "Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that his mission is especially to the Indians, those who are born in India. Amara gyaya guru hana tara e desh. Prithiviti achiyat nagaradigram sarvachar prachar haibe moranam." Yare deke kari kaho Krishna upadesh amara gyaya guru hana tara e desh. Yeah, this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction. So this is especially meant for those people born in India. This instruction was given when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling in South India. If you want to help me, then you become a guru under my instruction. You become a guru. And Prabhupada goes on, "But sir," someone may say, "but sir, I have no education. I'm not a brahmana. I am this, I am that. How can I become a guru?" And Prabhupada replies, "So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Amara gaya guru hana tara e desh. Where you are living, you just try to deliver them, but you become a guru. How I shall become? Yari deki tari kaho Krishna upadesh. Simply, you instruct what Krishna has said. That's all. Then you become guru. You don't require any other qualification." So, in this way, Prabhupada was preaching to these people in the Lions Club. You see, Prabhupada going to the Lions Club, he didn't change the preaching in any way. He preached to everyone the same way. You know, he didn't just try to flatter these people, tell them, "Oh, you're so nice, learned businessman," and you know, he wasn't interested in just getting people's money. He really tried to preach to them that they should also become devotees and they should teach others the message of Krishna. Prabhupada is explaining to them their responsibility, that you are born in India. It's a rare birth. You have to make proper use of your life. And that proper use is to teach people to know about Krishna, Krishna upadesh. Yari deki tari kaho Krishna upadesh. Wherever you go, whoever you meet, you have to tell them about Krishna upadesh. You have to know the instructions of Krishna. So this is for everyone. Men, women, you know, you can't say, "Oh, I'm not a Brahmin," or "I'm a woman, you know, I'm not educated." Everybody should know what are Krishna's instructions. Even we're uneducated, we can hear Krishna's instructions and we can repeat. That is perfect. If we repeat what we have heard, then that is perfect. So Prabhupada was encouraging these Lions Club members that they should also know what are Krishna's teachings. This is for everyone. You see, Prabhupada would take every opportunity to go everywhere to tell people about Krishna. He didn't think, "Oh, Lions Club, these people, all businessmen, they're just interested in money. They won't be interested to know about Krishna. I'm not going to preach to them." Prabhupada went everywhere to preach to people. He knew that the Lions Club people, these are all big businessmen, that in the future we will be approaching them to become life members and to support our temples, so we should get their support. So Prabhupada took the time to go and preach to them. Prabhupada goes on, alluding to the spread of the British Empire, he contrasted the motives of its representatives with that of Sri Chaitanya's. India's mission is not that we colonize in another country and exploit them and bring money and become a lord. No. India's mission is how to revive Krishna consciousness throughout the whole world. That is India's mission. Revise your Krishna consciousness. Be fixed up in Krishna and then distribute this knowledge. This is Indian mission. So Prabhupada is comparing Lord Chaitanya's mission to the British Empire. The British Empire, of course, they came to India and they exploited the natural resources of India. They took away so many jewels, precious gems and so on from India, and then they dumped also their own cloth, whatever cloth they were producing in their mills in England. They wanted the people in India should use their cloth and not spin their own cloth. Like that, they took advantage of India. But Lord Chaitanya's mission is not like that. Lord Chaitanya's mission is to revive Krishna consciousness throughout the world, to let people become fixed up in this knowledge. Not to just take advantage of people, but to give them some benefit. Prabhupada compared India and the Western countries is like the lame man and the blind man. He said the Western countries are blind and India is lame. So the two, the lame man and the blind man, they can cooperate together. The blind man sees how to walk and the lame man can be carried by the blind man. Prabhupada finished his lecture to polite applause. He was invited afterward to pose for a photograph. The leading members of the Rotary Club lined up in back, and Prabhupada, the sannyasis from our camp, and myself all sitting in front. It felt somehow special and historic to be part of an official photo with Srila Prabhupada. This evening's Pandal lecture was the last, because tomorrow Prabhupada returns to Madras and then goes to Bombay. The open courtyard was once again filled to capacity with thousands of attentive men and women sitting quietly and absorbed as Prabhupada concluded his series on the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He then made his presentations to new members in what has become a nightly ritual. Prabhupada is very happy and satisfied with the trip, apart from the peculiarities of the land offer. So you can see, Prabhupada had a full program everywhere he went, going to the Rotary Club in the afternoon, and then in the evening, Pandal program, lecturing to thousands of people, and inspiring people, encouraging them to take part in the activities of the Krishna consciousness movement. Okay, we will go on the next day. This is January the 8th, 1976. Before leaving to catch the train to Madras, the two sisters came to see Prabhupada in his room. He thanked them for their hospitality without directly bringing up the strange conditions put upon the deed of gift. He preached to them very positively that they should try to become real devotees of Krishna. He had me read to them the Gita verse concerning charity in the mode of goodness. He emphasized that one should not expect any reward or gain. This was the criterion for activity in Krishna consciousness. He encouraged them to try to rise to this standard. Even though the sisters appeared to be involved in a surreptitious scheme to take advantage of him, Prabhupada still tried to uplift them and give them his mercy. They had invited him to their home And therefore, he wanted to do some good for them. They listened, but what he said drew very little response from them, apart from obligatory acceptance of his thanks for the stay. Everyone in our party was glad to leave. It was unpleasant living in such close proximity with people who make us feel unwelcome and who ate meat. So here you see, Prabhupada sometimes would have to accept these conditions for the sake of preaching. If he thought this is a chance that we can do some more service for Krishna, we can get some land, we can have another temple, Prabhupada was willing to accept the inconvenience of living with meat eaters. Prabhupada, of course, had done this when he first went to America. He had to live with people who were meat eaters, and sometimes even he was living with a drug addict. Prabhupada was accepting all of these things just for the sake of an opportunity to serve Krishna more. You know, certainly we ourselves, we won't relish that kind of thing. We would certainly want to avoid it. But Prabhupada accepted all of these difficulties, so much hardship, just for the sake of trying to do some service for Krishna. So, very special. We can understand how merciful, how kind Prabhupada was. And here we see Prabhupada talking to these two ladies. He's not making them feel bad, but he's explaining to them the truth according to scripture. At the same time, he's not making them feel embarrassed or uncomfortable. He's simply presenting everything in relation to Lord Krishna's teaching. The train ride to Madras was pleasant. This Nellore trip has given me my first opportunity to journey with Srila Prabhupada on a train, and we were all happy to see him enjoy the trip. It was without strain and much more comfortable than flying, which he tends to dislike. Shravananda and Bhava Bhuti were waiting at the station to pick us up. They arranged a Chennai band to greet him at the station, and with great fanfare escorted him to a waiting car. This time, they arranged for Prabhupada to stay in our own center in Aspirin Gardens, a nice house in a pleasant suburb. Prabhupada liked it. He had a quick tour, and when Shravananda and Bhava Bhuti mentioned that they were thinking of getting another place, he told them to stay where they are. He noted some small bushes with curry leaves growing, as well as drumsticks, a long, thin, bean-like vegetable that Prabhupada likes very much. He requested Harikesh to use them in his lunch. So, Prabhupada didn't like devotees moving so often. He saw this was something of a Western disease. You know, come to one place and then, oh, this place is not very good, we'll move to another place. Actually, moving centers is not very good. Of course, this was a very new center. There were only the two devotees, Westerners, Americans. They had come to Madras to preach, and it was a very small center in the early days. And they were renting a house in a rural area, in a residential area. However, Prabhupada didn't like them to move. If you stay in one place and get established, it's better. Every time you move, you lose people, because people don't know where you've gone, and they may come again and they look for you and you've gone, you've moved, they don't know where you've gone. So it's not a good thing to have a center and move it. You try to keep it there. Once the deity is put there, once the temple starts activities, you should keep it there, not just move. Harisori Prabhu goes on describing his work with Prabhupada. He said, I shaved Prabhupada's head for him as we sat out on the small ground floor, front veranda. And then he took his mail. Tamal Krishna Maharaj informed him that the telegram sent to Australia from Bombay stating that Prabhupada was unable to attend Rath Yatra, had been returned and delivered. Prabhupada considered what to do. He said that he would go to Australia if Madhavisa Maharaj had already made arrangements. Since they may have advertised that Prabhupada would be present, he didn't want to spoil the event. Yet, this will certainly pose a big difficulty because Prabhupada is still not well enough to endure such a long plane ride. So here you see something of the Prabhupada's everyday problems, that people are inviting him to come all over the world. The devotees in Australia, led by at that time Madhavisa Maharaj was in charge, and he was inviting Prabhupada to come for their Rath Yatra. And they were expecting Prabhupada, but Prabhupada was not well. Prabhupada was already in his 80, he is 80 by this time. So to constant traveling and, you know, sometimes long aeroplane flights, not very comfortable. You know, you may think, oh, it must have been nice to go in an aeroplane. But, you know, actually aeroplanes are terrible things, you know. Very horrible. You have to sit there, you know, you can't move, can hardly stretch, and you have to sit for hours on end to go. You have to sit with all of these people. Many are eating meat, and sometimes they're drinking and all of these things. Prabhupada has to sit there in their association for hours on end. Sometimes they will show movies, mundane movies and things. So many inconveniences are there in traveling. But Prabhupada again would accept all of these things if he could do some service for Krishna. And here you see that he says, oh, if he has advertised for me to be there, then I should go, even though Prabhupada's health is not good. Another travel quandary arose when Tamal Krishna Maharaj discovered that our plane to Bombay was to depart in mid-evening. Prabhupada never travels on Thursday afternoon, especially between 4:30 and 7:30, for he considers these hours inauspicious for travel. You know, Thursday afternoon, that time, not an auspicious time to begin a journey. That's Rahu Kala, you know, in some of our temples, you know, where we read out the time of Rahu Kala. What time Rahu Kala starts, what time it ends, you know, and careful to avoid the inauspicious hours. So Prabhupada, especially Thursday afternoons, at that time, he would never begin a journey. On a previous visit to Australia to open the new Melbourne temple in May 1975, Srila Prabhupada delayed his departure from Perth to Melbourne for one day in order to avoid traveling on a Thursday afternoon. He was prepared to do the same today, but after some discussion, he finally decided to take the late flight, thus avoiding the most inauspicious hours while still keeping his schedule. Now, sometimes Prabhupada would have the bags packed before the inauspicious time, and the bags would be put outside the door. By packing the bags and putting the bags outside the door, it was like beginning the journey. And, you know, Prabhupada would always try, but he would do whatever he could to avoid these inauspicious hours. Prabhupada was concerned about these things. We left in the Mercedes car in mid-evening. Prabhupada observing all the little roadside shacks selling bananas and varieties of fruits and vegetables. He told us that in South India, people are still pious and still mainly vegetarian. He also recalled Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's preaching in the South and indicated that he was well pleased with the programs the devotees had arranged for him and the reception he received. As a final touch, Shravanananda had arranged through a life member to have the car drive right onto the airport tarmac, right up to the plane. Thus, at about 9 o'clock, we flew out, arriving in Bombay late at night. So this is the end of Prabhupada's visit to Nellore. The next chapter goes on with Prabhupada in Bombay and then Calcutta. So you see something of Prabhupada's activities. This diary, which is written by Hari Sori, who was Prabhupada's servant. He was giving Prabhupada massage daily and sometimes doing other services also for Prabhupada. So he was observing Prabhupada's activities. He could, and he's kept this diary describing everything. Just as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just as there are diaries recording the life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as a child, their diary was kept by Murari Gupta, who had observed all the childhood pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And after Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, then the diary was kept by Swarup Damodar Goswami. He was living there in Jagannath Puri with Lord Chaitanya. So like that, these are not just some stories, it's not just imagination. We want to know about the life of these personalities. Recorded writings are here, and they're describing everything about their activities. There's nothing secret in their life. They're very open. People were able to approach and observe them. Sometimes people think, oh, the leaders of a big spiritual organization, their lives are very secret, mysterious, and they are always having so much money and just accumulating money. But here you can see from the diary, what was Prabhupada's lifestyle? Very simple life, but constant preaching. Prabhupada was interested in always having the opportunity to speak and address people about Krishna, tell them about Krishna. This was Prabhupada's service for his spiritual master. And so Prabhupada wanted to establish the Krishna consciousness movement wherever he got the opportunity. He's going everywhere. We see in Prabhupada's time, we were not very much established here in Andhra Pradesh and even less in Tamil Nadu. But now, you know, the preaching is going on in Prabhupada's absence. The devotees are continuing to preach on behalf of Srila Prabhupada, and gradually more and more devotees are coming forward and taking part in the Krishna consciousness movement. So Krishna consciousness is not something foreign to the people of India. Lord Chaitanya had come here 500 years ago, and everywhere people were very happy to receive him and chant the holy name. And the process is being continued. You see also Prabhupada at this age, 80, he's constantly traveling and at the same time also writing. Section we heard in Nellore, he was speaking from the sixth canto Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, I think these lectures were later on recorded in the book. There's one book called Second Chants, which is on Prabhupada's lectures on some parts of the sixth canto, describing the story of Ajamila and how he is saved from the hands of the Yamadutas and how he is able to become liberated because he had chanted the name of his son, who was Narayan. So Prabhupada lectured on that, and then material was recorded and used to publish books. And Prabhupada was also writing, translating his Srimad Bhagavatam. He never had free time, you know, in that he would do his writing in the night when everyone was sleeping. That was the best time for Prabhupada to write. No one would disturb him. In those days, there were no computers, there was no emails, and Prabhupada was not so much inclined to get phone calls. Very rare Prabhupada would ever receive phone call. But Prabhupada would certainly deal with correspondence. He would have to answer letters. It wasn't always easy to catch up with Prabhupada because Prabhupada is traveling constantly, so you never know where he's going to be next. You want to write to him, you didn't know where he's going to be, where to write. You know, you write to one place and then they'd forward the letter, but by the time the letter's forwarded to the next place, he's moved from there as well. And so, and like that, and so, you know, the mail could be forwarded so many times before Prabhupada would receive it. So, not easy. And also, you know, as devotees, we also didn't like to trouble Prabhupada by writing letters to him, because he had so many disciples. And if everybody would write to him, then it would be so difficult for him. It would take so much of his time. And it would take, taking away Prabhupada's time meant he had less time for preaching and for writing his books. So it was more important that we allow Prabhupada the time to write his books and to give the public lectures rather than just deal with our own little personal problems. You see? So that's why most of us as devotees, we didn't write to Prabhupada personally, but we took advice from Prabhupada's senior disciples, Prabhupada's representatives, the temple president, sometimes the GBCs, and sannyasis, these kind of people. Then they can also give instruction to guide us. Not that we have to trouble Prabhupada all the time. But at the same time, if we did trouble Prabhupada, Prabhupada was always willing to answer and to take time to help us and to guide us. Prabhupada considered it his duty to constantly travel. Why didn't Prabhupada just sit down in one place and just write? It would have been certainly better for his health. But Prabhupada said, I'm constantly traveling to save you. He said, if I don't come and visit, he said, you will all just fall down. You just fall into Maya. So Prabhupada was concerned to see that the Krishna conscious temples were maintained and the proper standards were kept. And that was why Prabhupada traveled so much. He didn't want to just have a lot of books and no temples. The temples were also a very important part of Prabhupada's preaching. And he wanted to see that in the temples, the devotees follow all of Prabhupada's instructions, you know, rising early and bathing and daily chanting the holy name and then also worshipping the deity properly. Prabhupada would always be concerned that the deities are being properly worshipped, the standard is maintained, fresh flowers are being offered, and whatever is offered to the deities also should be good quality, shouldn't be too much spicy, it shouldn't be too oily, it should be proper, healthy, digestible food, palatable. And Prabhupada would be concerned about all of these things. He also was concerned accounts are kept properly, all the accounts are kept, and the devotees give the accounts for auditing so that they can keep their charitable tax status. All of these things had to be done. And Prabhupada had to make sure that all of these things were going on. So in this way you can see how Prabhupada was using his time, traveling, preaching, managing, at the same time having to take care of his own health, 80 years old. So we will stop here. Are there any questions or comments from anyone? Ananda Mahaprabhu, would you like to comment anything about Prabhupada on this section? Well, Haridas Thakur, he was loudly chanting the holy name. Prabhupada did not encourage us that we have to try to chant silently. He didn't want us to chant in the mind. In fact, he told, you know, the louder we chant, the more powerful it becomes. So Lao chanting was recommended. Why? We're not advanced enough to be able to control the mind, that we can simply chant in our mind. But when we chant loudly, we will be able to control our mind more. Now many people, many devotees come and they tell me how they're having difficulty controlling their mind when they chant. That they're chanting but they can't control their mind. Do you ever have that problem? Huh? Yes, we all have that problem because we have a restless mind. It's difficult to fix the mind on the chanting of the holy name of Krishna. But when you chant aloud, then the mind is more controlled. When you try to chant silently, it's much harder to fix the mind on the chanting. But loud chanting is more encouraged. Even the brahmanas in Chaitanya Bhagavat is described that some orthodox brahmanas were criticizing Haridas for loud chanting. And they said, where in the scriptures does it say like this? But Haridas quoted a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam in relation to the liberation of Vidyadhara. And there it is mentioned that the loud chanting can liberate a person. Haridas Thakur also gave the example, who is better? One person is chanting silently, so he's giving some benefit to himself, maybe. But if a person is chanting aloud, he is giving benefit to everyone who hears. So if you chant aloud, maybe 100 people are hearing. Who is better? The person who is maintaining one person or the person who is maintaining 100 people? Obviously, if you can maintain 100 people, that is better than just maintaining your own self. So loud chanting is helping to maintain other people because they will also hear the holy name. If we chant aloud, the other living entities, they will hear. There are so many living entities everywhere, and they will all benefit from the loud chanting of the holy names. To try to control the mind is not easy thing in this Kali Yuga. Even Arjuna, 5,000 years ago, told Krishna, Chanchalahi mana Krishna. Then I cannot control my mind. It's more restless than the wind. But we're thinking we can control our mind. Arjuna is a Raja, you know, he's a great devotee. He's a, you know, a very great personality. He's the son of Indra. He's endowed with so many wonderful qualities. He's a Maharati. He's got tremendous strength and wonderful character. He can say no even when he's approached by some woman from the heavenly planets and she wants to have sense gratification with him. He will refuse her and call her mother. You know, this, just see the character of Arjuna. You know, such wonderful character. But he also says, I cannot control my mind. And we're thinking, oh, I will control my mind. Arjuna, he can't control his mind, but I can control my mind. It's so foolish. This is simply our own foolish pride. We're thinking we're better than we can do what Arjuna couldn't do 5,000 years ago. Our position is so much hopeless, so much lower than Arjuna. But we're thinking, I can control my mind. I will chant in the mind. No, we're fooling ourselves. We're cheating ourselves. We're not really chanting in the mind. But we make a show like that. We have to chant aloud. Prabhupada said, when we chant, the lips must move. The lips have to move. You may not chant very loud, but the lips have to move. The process is shravanam and kirtan, hearing and chanting. We have to hear. We get benefit by hearing. And if we hear, we have to hear. And if others hear, then so much the better. So, this is a point. Yes, at the time of death you may lose your voice. So Maharaj Kulashekar prays Krishna Twadiya Padapankaja Panjarantam Adyaiva Me Vishatu Manasarajahamsa Prana Prayana Kapaye Kapavata Pitaye Kantavaro Dhanavado Smaranam Kutaste. Maharaj Kulashekar prays, let me die now before my throat is choked up with mucus. Let me die now while I can still chant the holy name with feeling. Because at the time of death, if I wait for the time of death naturally, then it may be very difficult for me to chant. Anyway, we have to practice. If we have practiced chanting the name throughout our life, at the time of death, it will not be difficult to remember Krishna. And the devotees can be there to chant for us so that we can hear. We may not be able to chant ourselves, but we can invite the devotees to be there at the time of our death, that we can hear them chanting. Nowadays also, we have these little electronic chanting boxes. They have a microchip, and it's constant chanting. So you could keep that on. You know, many devotees, they have their little chanting box, they keep it in their home, and they never turn it off. 24 hours a day, they have it. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And you can hear it 24 hours a day, Prabhupada chanting. So you can get one of these devices now. Technology can be used for the service of our Krishna consciousness. Devotees have their mobile phones. You know, every time they get their phone call, you know, you hear the Maha Mantra coming. So many ways we can help to remember Krishna and the chanting of Krishna's name. But don't just try to keep it in the mind. Don't try to suppress it. Don't try to, you know, make it silent. That's not the process. Lord Chaitanya's movement is congregational chanting, loud chanting. That will awaken people to Krishna consciousness. Give everyone the chance to hear the holy name. Okay, any other question? Yes, Prabhu.
Should we also keep track of auspicious and inauspicious times while dealing with things? Because it is said that Krishna consciousness is all auspicious.
Yes, that's true. What you say is true. So if you are convinced that you're firmly situated in Krishna consciousness, that you're transcended the modes of material nature, then yeah, you don't have to worry about what is auspicious and inauspicious. But we see Prabhupada, he did care, at least on Thursday afternoon. He wouldn't begin a journey. So there's no harm in these things. You know, if there, of course, we won't put off devotional service. We won't say, oh, I'm not going to do service, it's not auspicious time. Devotional service itself is the most auspicious. So, you know, you have to be a little intelligent to know when to apply these things and when not. For example, you know, if you're going to get married, you want to do a marriage ceremony, then you should think about these things. This is important a little bit. You want to pick auspicious time. Similarly, you know, and nowadays also, you know, when we design temples, you know, we look at the vastu and like this, you know, these things also help. They can help us. Prabhupada didn't check the Rahu Kala every day. You know, there's a Rahu Kala every day, but he was particularly concerned Thursday afternoon, that time, 4:30 to 7:30. He wouldn't begin a journey. He wouldn't leave on a journey that time. So we have to do what's practical. I know, in Malaysia, we have one astrologer devotee there, and he publishes a little booklet every year with the times of Rahu Kala every day. So every day, every morning, they'll read out what time Rahu Kala starts and what time it finishes. And, you know, just so that you know, we know. If you're going to do some Griha Pravesh or something, some kind of samskar like that, then, you know, we wouldn't want to do it at the time of Rahu Kala. Understand? Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.